Information, please. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. We want you to send us questions, stickers of all sorts, together with the right answers. We have four experts here every Tuesday night who will answer them correctly or pay you $5 for every question that stumps them. Each question accepted wins you $2. Our master of ceremonies is Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Good evening, everybody. We have a quartet of veterans here tonight, so I expect practically no mistakes. Is that clear, gentlemen? No response. Complete apathy. Captaining the team is Franklin P. Adams, columnist of the New York Post, and he will be nobly supported by Mr. Mark Duffield, day news editor of the New York Herald Tribune, by Oscar Levant, who can play piano, answer questions, and whistle through his teeth all at the same time, and by Percy Waxman, associate editor of the Cosmopolitan magazine, who was pretty smart a couple of weeks ago and looks even brighter tonight. He's been shined up in the meantime. Now, gentlemen, you know the rules. I'll put the question to the entire board. If you know the answer, raise your hand. A question composed of no more than two parts must be answered by one man. If it has more parts than that, the board may cooperate. But if any part is answered wrong, we lose $5. When you hear that cash register ring, that means the questioner is getting his $5 in cash. Ladies and gentlemen, information, please, is an unrehearsed, unforeseeable, and sometimes perfectly unmanageable program. You may expect anything. We're off. Now, the first question comes from Mr. Harvey B. Leggy of Sharon, Massachusetts. Any of you four gentlemen feeling particularly childish this evening? Mr. Waxman is smiling. Maybe we'll get the answer out of him. You have to answer the following questions by reciting the first line of the appropriate nursery rhyme. The first line of the appropriate nursery rhyme. One, who went where riding on a pony? If that gets them down, I'm going to resign. Mr. Adams.
Yankee Doodle went to town.
Very nice, Mr. Adams. Two.
Is that a nursery rhyme?
They call it a nursery rhyme on my card, sure. Don't you think it's a nursery rhyme?
On my card, no.
He's pretty savage this evening, Mr. Adams. Why isn't it a nursery rhyme, Mr. Adams?
Because it's a song. A very old song.
But not old enough to be a nursery rhyme.
No.
I think that's perfectly true. Well, don't get sore, Mr. Adams. Play with us this evening a little, won't you? Two, who washed what and hung them up to dry? Who washed what and hung them up to dry? Never saw a more mature-looking quartet in my life. Who washed what and hung them up to dry? No? One down on that.
Little Sally Water.
No, the three little kittens washed their mittens. Don't you know that, gentlemen? Sorry. Three. See if you can redeem yourself on the third one. Who met whom going to a fair? Who met whom going to a fair? Mr. Waxman.
Simple Simon met a pieman.
Very good indeed. And finally, who sat where warming her pretty little toes? Who sat where warming her pretty little toes, Mr. Adams?
Little Polly Flinders.
Yes, and where did she sit? Localizer.
Among the cinders.
Sat among the cinders, that's correct. Three out of four, not quite enough. $5, please. Remember about that. Who washed what and hung them up to dry? Any of you gentlemen remember that now? Three little kittens washed their mittens. Mr. Waxman is going to remember that for the rest of his life. The second question from Mr. F.D. Brown of New York City. The following phrases suggest what cigars. By the way, which of you gentlemen smoke cigars? Mr. Adams, I know, does smoke a cigar. He has one. No, we can't smoke here, Mr. Adams. Sorry. Save it. Identify five. Out of five, as a matter of fact. One, young female horses. The following phrases suggest what cigars? Young female horses. This is a darn useful question. Young female horses. See, try to think of what a young female horse is called outside of hay.
What are they called?
I can't tell you. That's the answer to the question. Mr. Levant.
I never heard of
it. Fillies.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Two, a legal library. A legal library. Mr. Waxman?
No.
Want to withdraw? No, mm-hmm. All right. A legal library. Have to think of a legal library containing a book or books by a famous legalist.
Blackstone,
Mr. Waxman. Very good indeed. Three, a great compromiser. A great compromiser. Mr. Duffield.
William Penn.
Henry Clay.
Henry Clay would be correct. I suppose William Penn would do. He was a compromiser.
Diplomat of the first order?
Yes, indeed. Then add. Four, typewriters. Typewriters. Mr. Duffield.
Corona, Corona.
Very good. Heard you the first time. Corona is enough. Five, a poet. Mr. Levant.
Robert Burns.
That's right. Five out of five is correct. They do know their cigars. Next question for Mr. H.W. Shell of Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. We're asked to play or whistle or hum or bellow the main theme in three of the four following musical compositions. A studio audience, what do you want them to do? Play it, whistle it, hum it, or bellow it? Play it, play it. All right.
Mr. First. Adams?
Beg pardon?
Can I do it?
If you think you can, Mr. Levant. Awfully confident Mr. Levant is. Now, you have to play the main theme in the third movement of César Franck's Symphony in D minor. Is that right? Seems to be right. Gershwin's American in Paris, Mr. Levant, as long as you're at the piano.
Which thing?
You got me.
The other thing's more popular,
though. All right, let's have the other thing. I know that one's correct.
More, I know it.
No. It's a quiz program, not a recital. It's a quiz program. Third, the first movement of the Symphony in G minor of Mozart. Maybe that's hard. I don't know. Symphony in G minor of Mozart, first movement. Very pretty. Is that correct? That's correct. And finally, you want to go on with that, Mr. Levant? He loves this piano. The second movement of Haydn's Clock Symphony.
Second movement?
Yeah. You know, one, two. Second movement. Gee, maybe we've got him down.
Not a public library. I don't know it.
Don't know that one? Second
no.
movement of Haydn's Clock Symphony. Well, you got three out of four, so we saved ourselves. And I think pretty good. Some other time, we'll have you come back and after you've practiced it, Mr. Levant, give us that second movement of the Clock Symphony of Haydn. I forget how it goes myself now, as a matter of fact. Next question from M. Halsey of Chicago. This is a newspaper question, and it involves a situation which we're all anxiously following at the present moment. If any one of the following countries were invaded by Germany, what nations might come to its defense and why? France. If any one of the following countries are invaded by Germany, what nations might come to its defense and why? The first is France. Mr. Duffield.
I'd say England would come to France's defense because if the Germans were to capture northern France, German warplanes could bomb London within a half an hour.
That would be correct. Second, Belgium. If Belgium were invaded by Germany. Mr. Duffield?
England again, for the same reason.
And do you think there might be some other country that might come to the aid of Belgium?
Yes, but England, in England's case there, in both France and Belgium, it'll be about the same for as though New York were to be attacked by enemy bombers in, say, in New Haven, Connecticut. It's about the same distance.
That's bringing it pretty close to home.
Yes, there would be another country. France would obviously come to Belgium's aid because the if German troops trampled Belgium, Paris would be the next stop.
Yeah, that's correct. Three, Poland. Mr. Duffield.
Russia. Because if German troops were struck across the Polish plains, Moscow would be their goal.
That sounds reasonable to me, though pretty dreadful. Four, Czechoslovakia. Who would come to the... Yes, Mr. Duffield.
Well, that's the critical spot tonight.
Yes. That's why we have it last.
If Czechoslovakia falls, that means that Hitler is in a position to march down on the Balkans and seize control of the rich wheat and oil lands down there.
Yes.
And thereby make Germany strong enough so it could conceivably attack both Russia on the east and France on the west.
Who would come to the aid of Czechoslovakia, do you think?
So Russia and France will come to the aid if necessary, yes. And that's why they're worried tonight.
Mr. Duffield, what's your guess on the developments for the next 2 days? Have you got any inside
information?
My guess
is, Mr. Fadiman, that Hitler has been bluffing and that he is tonight trying to back down on that bluff. but
we have another 24 hours of peace ahead of us. You think?
I think so, and I don't think I think unless he is unable to control the mass hysteria that he has created among the Sudetans in Czechoslovakia, no. I don't think he wants a war now. And I think the chances are there will be no war now.
Well, that's very comfortable. I hope you're right. And I'm very glad that we have the Atlantic and the Pacific on either side of us. Thank you very much, Mr. Duffield. The next question from Eleanor C. Johnquest of Fairfield, Connecticut. We're asked to recite four lines or passages from different poems in which a rose or roses are mentioned. Four passages from poems in which a rose or roses are mentioned. Now, Mr. Levant.
A rose by any other name.
Yes. You want to go on? Let's have the second line of that.
I'm lucky I know that.
By any other name would smell as sweet. Mr. Waxman. That's one.
A rose is a rose is a rose by Gertrude Stein.
Well, the quotation is certainly correct, but it is not a poem. I don't even think it's prose.
She thought it was a poem.
Yes, but we're not taking what she says as gospel this evening. No, I say that it's not a poem.
I'll say it's in a book of poems.
No, won't accept it.
Sorry?
Don't like Miss Stein. Second, Mr. Adams.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
All right. Sure do remember your album, Mr. Adams. That's two.
And Stein two is more. A poet, and so are you.
Thank you, Mr. Waxman. Two more. Two more. Rose or roses. Mr. Waxman.
The flowers that bloom in the spring, tra-la-la, have nothing to do with this case.
Well, that's perfectly true, but of course, among those flowers, there no doubt were roses, but I don't think that would do for this question. You have to give us a line with the word rose in it. Mr. Adams.
Only roses, only roses.
Where's that from?
That is from...
Sounds like an advertisement by Billy Rose.
Ruddy Gore.
I beg your pardon?
Ruddy Gore. The poem, A Song in Ruddy Gore.
I'll accept that. He knows Gilbert Sullivan backwards and forwards. Probably quite correct. Well, we have to have a fourth one.
Will a song do?
Sweet yes, Rosie O'Grady.
Oh, no, no, no. I won't take that. Mr. Waxman.
Only a rose from the Vagabond King.
I was going to say that.
Well, is that a line of poetry?
It's a
line from a song.
All right, Mr. Waxman. And Mr. Levant, you were going to say it, too.
It's a title, as a matter of fact.
All right, I'll let that go. I can think of a number of others. Gather your rosebuds while you may, old time is still a-flying, from Herrick. You all remember that, you four classical gentlemen, I'm sure. And then the shortest and most pointed poem ever written about a rose, don't you know, we all learned it in school. Mary Rose sat on a pin. Mary Rose, don't you know that? The next one from Mr. J. Johnson of Miami, Florida. What dancers are brought to mind by each of the following musical accompaniments? And we're going to have them played. There are six altogether, and you have to name four out of the six. Let's have the first. Mr. Levant.
Pat Rooney.
Pat Rooney, yes. What's the song?
Rosie O'Grady.
Yes, you had it just a minute ago, Mr. Adams. You just had it in the wrong question, that's all. Let's have the second. Mr. Levant.
Pavlova, the swan.
That's right. Who wrote it, Mr. Levant?
Saint-Saëns.
All right, that's correct. That's correct. Third. Gee, I don't think they know that one. Mr. Duffield.
The Three Little Pigs.
Three Little Pigs, that's right. What's the song called?
Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf?
Very good, Mr. Levant. Thank you very much. Fourth. Mr. Adams is snapping his fingers. It's not a snap question.
Castanet.
Beg pardon?
Is that Escudero? No.
Just a minute, Mr. Levant. What did you, Mr. Adams, what did you say? Castanets?
No, I said that was a castanet.
Oh, that was a castanet. Oh, I see. I thought that was the name of the song. Mr. Levant, do you have the answer?
I'm guessing.
All right, do so. Do so, by all means.
Well, any Spanish dancer.
No.
Well, let me guess then.
All right, Mr. Duffield.
The Argentina.
No.
Escudero?
No. Have we had enough of this? The song is continental, and the dancer is...
Fred Astaire.
Yes, but you didn't get it. That's one wrong.
Well, that's not the way it's played. It's not played with a tango accompaniment.
Don't like the way it's played.
Well, it's wrong.
You're going to bust up this program in a minute.
Miscarriage of justice.
Now, we have only one piano and one pianist. We have to listen to him.
You don't do it with a tango bass.
You don't like it.
Well, it's wrong.
Now, you're sore.
We're through.
All right. All I've got left now is Mr. Waxman and Mr. Duffy. Terrible-tempered group this evening. Let's have the fifth. All right, Mr. LeVan, come on back.
That's Jerry Kern.
No.
Yeah, that's Fred Astaire. Jerome Kern wrote it. It's called Bojangles.
Fred Astaire would do. Yeah. Bojangles. And there's another dancer associated with the...
Ginger
Bill
Rogers.
Robinson. No, Bill Robinson, yes.
But well, he didn't dance it.
He didn't dance it?
No.
So you're going to keep on contradicting me all evening, Mr. LeVan?
No, it was written about Bill Robinson. It was danced by Fred Astaire.
Is that true?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we had Fred Astaire given to us by Mr. Waxman.
No, not on this one.
Oh, that was you, Mr. LeVan. Oh, he wants credit. All right, we'll give you credit for Fred Astaire. Let's have the sixth and last. Mr. LeVan.
The Marx Brothers.
Oh, come.
Yeah,
they don't
really
dance, do they?
The Marx Military, he's thinking of.
Yeah, the Marx.
As a matter of fact, that's the name of the song. Mr. That's LeVan?
They danced in I'll Say She Is to the Marx Military, Schubert.
Did they really?
Yeah.
You're not kidding.
They're classical dancers.
I'm going to tell them that. They don't know it.
The real one is Isadora Duncan.
Oh, you think she's real?
Well, she's not as good a dancer. She's funnier.
She was funnier, that's true. 5 out of 6, very good indeed. We only had to get 4 out of 6. the next question from Delaware, Ohio, Mr. T.C. Dunham. Name the literary work in which each of the following taverns, that's practically the same as a saloon, gentlemen, in which each of the following taverns played a part. 1, the Admiral Benbow Inn. There are 4 altogether, and I think we ought to get all 4 of them. The Admiral Benbow Inn. Don't know their taverns as well as their cigars.
I'll make a guess at that.
All right, Mr. Waxman.
I think that's in Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island.
That's quite correct, Mr. Waxman. 2, Joe's Barroom. Joe's Barroom.
Sounds low class, but...
It is very low class. It is very low class, Mr. Duffield. You're quite right. You have a nose for that sort of thing.
That excludes the classics, then.
Joe. That excludes the classic. It is a classic in a way, but it's a popular classic. Oh,
the face on the barroom
That's
floor.
Correct, Mr. LeVan. Do you think I was hinting too much? No, I don't think I was. You remember the lines? 'Twas a balmy summer evening, and a goodly crowd was there that well-nigh filled Joe's barroom on the corner by the square. All right. The Tabard Inn, T-A-B-A-R-D. This is a real classic this time. The Tabard Inn. Mr. Waxman.
Chaucer, the Canterbury Tales.
That's correct. And finally, the Malamute Saloon. Mr. Adams.
Robert W. Service.
What's the name of the poem? You've got the author.
The lady known as Lou is the catchline.
Well, that's the line.
The shooting of Dan McGrew.
The shooting of Dan McGrew. Yes, that's correct. Did we get all those? Yes, we did. The next one from Mr. William Coombs of Boston. What headline news originated in or is associated with each of the following cities last week? What headline news originated in each of the following cities last week? There are 4 cities. 1, New York City. Mr. Duffield?
The Hines trial.
Yes, the Hines trial. I can think of another event that, a very important one, that took front page in the newspapers for several days. Think of your front page, Mr. Duffield.
All I can think of is Europe on the front page.
Well, this was a very important but rather sad event.
The weather, you mean?
No.
Oh, Cardinal Hayes.
Yes, the death of Cardinal Hayes. 2, Denton, Maryland. D-E-N-T-O-N. Mr. Duffield.
President Roosevelt tried to win over Maryland to his way of thinking down there, but didn't do so.
No editorializing. That's correct. 3, Germantown, Pennsylvania. Mr. Adams?
The United States retained the Davis Cup.
The Davis Cup tennis matches, yes, that's correct. And 4,
they retained the cup, not the matches.
No matches in the cup. Beg your pardon. Ladies and gentlemen, an error has been committed. We retained the cup and not the matches. 4, San Francisco, California. Mr. Duffield.
Well, there's been a big department store strike out there. That do you?
That'll do me. 4 out of 4. Very good indeed. Well, Information Please announces that are doing pretty well this evening. We're down only $5. See if we can stick them from now on. B. Hunt of New York City sends us the following question. Name the books suggested in each of the following imaginary newspaper headlines. I'm going to read 5 imaginary newspaper headlines. and you have to get 4 out of 5 books that are associated with them, or suggested by them, let's say. 1. Liberal New England newspaper editor bullied by dictator. The volunteers, Mr. Adams.
It can't happen here.
Very good. 2. Military hero throttles wife in fit of jealousy. Good plot.
Othello.
Very good, Mr. Levant. 3. British lord helps French nobility escape guillotine. Mr. Duffield.
Tale of Two Cities.
No. Who was the British lord who escaped, who helped the French nobility to escape the guillotine?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
Yeah.
The minute I said that.
See, as soon as we get down to brass tacks, not so good. I have to call that wrong. Mr. Levant.
That was a moving picture. Leslie
right.
Howard played the part.
All he knows is that Leslie Howard played the part. What's the name of the
motion
picture?
Damn Clever Something. What's the name of it?
No. That's right.
Funny name.
Yep, that's it. You've got it.
I know who wrote it, I think. A woman.
A woman?
Yeah.
Is that all you know?
I ought to know that.
Because it's one out of two.
It starts with P, doesn't it?
I beg pardon? Well, one of the words starts with P. The third
Pimpernel,
word...
Pimpernel, Scarlet Pimpernel.
Ah, very good. Yeah. But too late, I wish you said that at the beginning. The fourth one, victim of environment. And by the way, any headline writer who used the word environment in a headline would be fired, wouldn't he, Mr. Duffield?
Definitely. He couldn't get it in anyway.
No, he couldn't get it in. I wonder what they call environment in newspaperies.
GIRT. G-I-R-T.
G-I-R-T. Victim of GIRT. Victim of environment murders fiancé in order to marry rich girl. Mr. Levant.
American Tragedy.
Very good. By whom?
Dreiser.
By Dreiser. Would you say that was Dreiser's most popular work, Mr. Levant?
Most popular book.
Would you say that? Most popular work.
You mean the best-selling novel he's had?
No, I mean the most popular thing he's ever written.
On account of the moving picture, yes.
No, would be wrong. Mr.
On
Adams,
account of the play.
What would you say?
Jenny Garrett.
No.
Sister Carrie.
No.
The Genius.
The Genius.
No. They know all the works, anyway. No, the most popular thing Dreiser ever wrote.
Titan.
No. Yes, Mr.
On the Banks of the Wallbank.
That's correct.
But he didn't
write
the same.
He wrote the words.
That's Paul Dresser.
His brother wrote it. Paul
no,
Dresser.
He wrote the words. He wrote the words and his brother wrote the music. Isn't that right, Mr. Adams?
He wrote the second stanza, I think, and maybe the first. But he wrote the... He wrote the words.
He wrote the words. And that certainly is the most popular thing he ever wrote. All right. 5 and last. Harvard student joins noted woodsman in attempt to find new entrance to Pacific. I wouldn't call that a headline. I'd call that the story. Harvard student joins noted woodsman in attempt to find new entrance to Pacific.
Nothing left to the imagination.
Not a thing. Not a thing.
Not Wells Fargo. There's no such book.
No, Mr. Levant. No, that's a motion picture,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. I'm confused by those pictures.
You know the difference between a motion picture and a book.
Not anymore.
All right. I'm sorry, the answer to that is a book that practically everybody but the four experts has read. Northwest Passage by Kenneth Roberts. Info experts ring cash register. Thank you. The next question comes to us from a very famous radio orchestra conductor, probably known to most of the people in the audience, Dr. Frank Black of Radio City, New York. We're going to play a melody that includes 4 well-known themes of classical and popular music. And we want you to identify or unscramble each of the 4 themes. Now, this is a tough one. Do you fellas want to skip it? If you want to skip it, we can just skip it. It costs $5, of course. You want to take it, Mr. Levant? You don't feel nervous about it?
I'm nervous, but I want to take it.
All right. Let's have it.
Second movement of the Brahms first.
That's one of them. Mr. Levant?
That's Beethoven, Minuet.
Yes, correct. That's 2. I think this is miraculous. I'm really interested in this. Pretty good.
Is there an...
We can do it again. We can do it again for you, Mr. Levant, if you wish.
How many did I miss?
Well, you've got to get 4 of them. You see, you've got the Brahms,
the
first symphony, second movement, and you've got the Minuet in G of Beethoven.
Yeah.
You want to have it played again?
Yeah.
You like to listen to it. All right?
That's very warm there.
You're getting there, eh, Mr. Levant?
One
this
class...
part, this part, I don't know.
We should have left that part out.
It's a cadence. It's a...
One popular and one classical are the two remaining themes. One popular and one classical.
Well, this is the Beethoven part.
Beethoven?
Yeah, I know.
We had Beethoven once. How'd you like to have Beethoven again?
I know this. What is it?
You know it. You know, I bet he does know it, too. It's tough.
I know that.
A nice set of teeth to whistle with. Well, I think that's a very difficult question. The other two melodies are the second movement of the Second Symphony of Beethoven.
I don't know that.
And Smile and Through.
Yeah, that's... Da, da, da,
da. Oh, that's right, Mr. You know, I hate to ring up $5 on that, but I think that's one of the most difficult questions
by
the information police has ever posed. We really ought to ring up only $2.50 on it. All right, make
give
it $5.
$5.
Dr. Black, if you're listening, you're going to get $5, but that was a tough question. The next one, we combine questions from two people, from Mr. A.C. Moore of Germantown, Pennsylvania, and C. Youngquist of Wilmette, Illinois. Give the last line of the following verses. There are three verses altogether. By the time you swear you're his, shivering and sighing, and he vows his passion is infinite, undying, lady, make a note of this.
He's lying.
I think I ought to allow you credit on that, Mr. Adams. The correct line is one of you is lying, but your instinct was right. And who wrote it, Mr. Adams?
Mrs. Dorothy Parker.
That's quite correct. I think we'll count that okay. Two, when you're away, I'm restless, lonely, wretched, bored, dejected. Only here's the rub, my darling dear.
You're never away.
Doesn't rhyme, Mr. Levan. Doesn't
Will
rhyme.
Recite that again.
Yes, I'll recite it
like
again. I'd love
you.
To do it. When you're away, I'm restless, lonely, wretched, bored, dejected. Only here's the rub, my darling dear. I feel...
I am not neglected.
It's a nice sentiment.
The point is that I feel the same when you're here.
That's practically it. I feel the same when you are here. From,
Samuel Hoffenstein.
Yep. Very good.
Let's see printed same.
All right, let's see if you can get this. Did you print that one?
Yes, sir.
Did you print the one by Dorothy Parker?
I don't remember.
Did you print this one? The rich man has his motor car, his country and his town estate. He smokes a 50-cent cigar and jeers at fate. Yet though my lamp burns low and dim, though I'm a slave for livelihood, think you that I would change with him?
You bet I would.
That's good, Mr. Adams.
That's
who wrote that?
That's a song. I wrote it.
Very good, Mr. Adams. All right. No more for tonight. We've lost, let's see, we've lost $15. Next week, we'll have Mr. Adams back with us, together with Mr. John Kieran. And our guest of honor will be the famous, popular writer, Clarence Buddington Kellan. And now, Mr. Cross, will you take the mic and remind our audience of the rules once more? Information, please, thanks you and asks you to come again.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. We meet again next week at 8:30 for another battle of the public versus the experts. Please send us questions, any number of them, with the correct answers. And don't get worried if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. Remember, $2 per question, $5 more if the board flops on it. All questions become the property of Information Please. Send them to Information Please, NBC Radio City, New York. Until next Tuesday evening at 8:30, good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.